Hi, this is Leonard Peikoff here to apply Ayn Rand's philosophy of objectivism to your real-life questions. My responses cover subjects of general interest, such as human relationships, career, and morality, but not current politics. For the present, my answers are posted every other week on Mondays, and Dr. Yaron Brook answers questions on current events on the alternate Mondays. You can listen to full episodes on iTunes or listen to single questions or full episodes on my website. Several years of podcasts are now easily searchable by topic or keywords. If you have a philosophical question to ask, simply go to www.peikoff.com, and that's spelled P as in Peter, E-I-K-O-F-F, like the word off at the end, peikoff.com. And of course, feel free to follow me on Facebook and Twitter. I want to say a few words about my daughter's new book, No Time to Die. An excellent new book, but I won't go into a lot of detail because you might think, since I'm her father, I'm being subjective. But I do think it's very good. I enjoyed it. It is a biomedical thriller centering around the issue of aging. What would happen if we could stop aging? How many benefits? Is there problems? And it's tied to a really good conflict between the scientists who are trying to understand aging and the government, which for various reasons is opposed to that discovery. So it's a story and it deals with very important ideas. If any of you question, if you read it, it's called No Time to Die. If any of you read it, you may think, oh, no government official would ever be against learning how to combat aging. Look up in your Google Ezekiel Emanuel, E-M-A-N-I-E-L, or U-E-L, Emanuel, one of the main architects of Obamacare, and see if you can find out what the Obama administration's attitude is toward aging. And I think you'll see that Kira's book is not science fiction, unfortunately. I'm proud to say that her sales have been really great, and you may know that Amazon every hour presents the order of best of sellers. Number one means the best-selling book of out of 4 million at that time. And then there's 2 or 3. And publishers think that if you get into the 4 or 5 number, like 10,000, 20,000, that's a good sale. And Kira got into the 600s, which is amazing. So I'd like to ask you, a book can very much benefit by reviews on Amazon. And this is whether they're good or not, because it simply shows people's interest, which attracts other people. So if you have the time and want to, she and I would appreciate you writing a review of any quality, whatever you honestly believe. Now I have a question. I think it is important that people know the truth in regard to philosophy, but I hesitate to tell people that objectivism provides the truth, that it is the truest philosophy ever formulated. I cannot get past that moment of hesitation. I feel like I can't rightly say that objectivism is the right philosophy for man. What should I do? Well, I would say don't. Don't worry about saying it. Just don't say it, because if you say it out of the blue with no basis, it's completely arbitrary, and they are entirely right to dismiss it. You have to treat beginners to philosophy or people who know nothing about objectivism like you treat any child or high school student or college student who's learning philosophy. You first present concrete. You have to discuss, and not all at one night, obviously. Some of the key issues: ethics, egoism, reason versus supernaturalism, freedom versus determinism, across a period of time until your audience or the person you're talking to acquires some knowledge of philosophy. And you have to be able to show them the way till they can grasp that these issues are not all independent and separate from each other, but are integrated into a total, which is philosophy. And then, if they're interested, and only if they're interested, All you need to do is say. So if we add up this answer and this answer and this answer, and you see they're all connected, that is objectivism. And now you see why I hold that objectivism is the true philosophy. Anything short of that is worthless. It's like a religion. Christian God is the greatest. That's it. You can't do that. Not representing objectivism. How is it possible for someone to write science fiction or fantasy while expressing a reason-based sense of life? Well, it's very easy to do that as long as you understand that fiction of any kind is not a concern to present, quote, truth or fact in the sense of newspaper or observational fact. It's related to reality in many ways. One is it's a metaphor. It can be a metaphor, where things that are unreal, that never existed, that even couldn't exist, nevertheless represent real things or real categories of things. So the author is presenting fantasy as a way of commenting on real life. For instance, the inventions of Galt in Atlas Shrugged are not real. That's not, quote, true, but that does express a fact of real life, the relation between the creator and achievement, industrial revolution. So it's absolutely reason-based, but that doesn't mean the concrete are descriptions of what's already there. A perfect other example of this would be Gulliver's Travels. Now, he doesn't think there's one world of pygmies and one world of giants, but those represent different political viewpoints in England at the time. Now, another way, other than that, there's many ways, but I'm not going to give you all of them. Here's one more way in which science fiction or fantasy can express a reason, and that is, I see the best science fiction, at least the best in my opinion, as a form of abstraction, as a form of cognition, really. Because what they do, this is one kind of science fiction, but one which I especially like. They keep everything the same, but they change one element. And then they show you the logical implications of that one element. And I find that really interesting to point out what that one element is. The excellent example of that whole approach is the Twilight Zone, which is my, the Rod Serling Twilight Zone, which is my favorite TV show of all time. Many of them do that. I could tell you the story of many, but I won't take the time to do that. But you check out them, and you'll see that in many, many cases, one is concerned only with what would happen if everything got colder. And what would happen if you were given everything you want without any work? And only that change, everything else is the same. And it's instructive and fascinating, and it still is art. Now, you can work out many other ways. I'm a big fan of science fiction and even fantasy, if the fantasy is not about King Menahop and galaxy Twitchawitch, which is governed by rule so-and-so, which changes every Tuesday. Now, that kind of science fiction I can't read. Now, get this one. If my wife or child is about to walk in front of a speeding car and there is no time to yell a warning, is it okay to use force to stop them from being injured or killed? The force being that I would violently grab them if necessary. Or should I do nothing because that would be initiating, sorry, because that would be initiating force. Now, this is a totally out of context question. When objectivism says it's evil to initiate force, it does not mean that if your wife steps over a stone and starts to fall, you keep your hands up off her because it would mean you're using force on her. I mean, that's fantastic. Here, by the nature of your relationship, you have a common value. We are mutual value. You know that she would consent to this, and you know that she would hate you if afterward you said, well, I think each person should be, you know, self-sufficient. I don't want to force my views on you. If your views are even conceivably different from hers on that, you should let them go, or you should help them and then get a divorce. That is not a context to which the initiation of force conceivably even applies. Now, here's a question which I've somewhat reworded to make it briefer. I've had lots of friends and a lot of disappointment, so I have broken off with them. But I now have one good friend who has real virtues, but he smokes pot and occasionally uses cocaine. I like his company. He is very laid back, which helps me to relax. According to objectivism, should I remain friends with this person? Up to a point, I don't see that there's anything in the objectivist morality which would be against your remaining friends. You can take it as a variation of he takes too much alcohol or he takes alcohol. The point that I would say comes up is if he takes enough of it, often enough, to affect and reduce his mental ability, his interest in things, his energy, his ability and interest in coping. If laid back means, you know, he just sits or lies in his position and puffs or snorts, then I would say it's not so much evil that you are friendly with him, but what do you get out of it? If it's just that you can relax too, take a tranquilizer. But what else do you get from him? That is what you would have to ask. If you can find some rational value, he can talk algebra with you, even on his back, you know, when he's high, okay. But it's like any of these things that get you high. If you get a rational value and you don't regard him as negative, as devoid of value because of his actions, I don't see anything wrong with it. If you see evidence of a problem and it bothers you and it affects your relationship, that is a different thing. Then you pull away. I had a friend once that I met in a writing class many, many years ago, and he was on pot, which I didn't even know at the beginning, but he was a fun guy, and we got along, and then I noticed that he was slower than he used to be, and he was more, tend to gaze out, more vacant, less interested in what was going on, and it just became of no interest to me, and we gradually broke apart. I don't think I was immoral at the beginning. I wasn't urging him to do that. I just wasn't boycotting him for doing that. Now, if you wanted to do that, I wouldn't have any problem with that. If you say, I just don't want to deal with this, but I can't see that you could find something in objectivism that would mandate your breaking off a relationship. Now, if he was giving pot to his kids, the way they gave it to Robert Downey Jr., then I would say that's monstrous. You have nothing to do with that guy at all. But what about Robert Downey Jr. was given it as a child and couldn't get it out of his system? He had many virtues, and if you want to, you know, go out to drink or whatever with him, I don't see that you could criticize that. If you want to know more about Ayn Rand's philosophy, I invite you to ask me a question. I can't answer them all, but I do read them all. Just write to leonard@peekoff.com. And if you haven't already done so, start by reading Ayn Rand's two most important novels, The Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged. And I might add that it wouldn't hurt you to read my latest book, The Dim Hypothesis.